Hi there, I'm Barbara Turley, and you're watching another episode of Feminine Wealth TV, the show that uncovers the diamond tips on creating truly conscious wealth from change makers, world shakers, and wealth creators. Recently, I was talking to an energy healer that told me that the second chakra is where money, sex, and power come together. So I thought that would be a really interesting topic to have on the show, and who better to get than a sex expert on the show? So today I'm joined by Dr. Nikki Goldstein, and she is a sexologist who has appeared on Channel 7. She's been in many publications, and she is a renowned expert on this particular topic. So please welcome Nikki to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm excited to get into this exciting, sizzling topic.
The topic that's boring now for me and interesting for everyone else.
Oh, right, okay. So you're just talking about it every day, constantly.
It's become normal. And that's what I think that's really interesting is that, you know, I could talk about sex so easily and I only wish other people could as well without having to be a sexologist.
Wow, it sounds like money.
Yes.
People find it difficult to talk about money as well.
Yes. Yeah. I haven't quite grasped politics as well, but sex has definitely become an everyday topic, even amongst my friends and my family.
Yeah.
It's just something we discuss and we talk about, and we're not sitting there dishing the dirt on our personal details, but we can have an intellectual debate about a sexual topic without it being taboo or scary.
Isn't that funny? Because even as you were saying that, I was sort of feeling like I can't imagine my family talking about that. And, you know, it's just such a... It is a taboo topic still,
And my mother will watch documentaries that I'm watching on TV. She watched My Granny the Escort the other night, and I'm watching it here and she's watching it in Queensland.
Yeah.
And she wants to call me up in the ad breaks and say, what do you think of this and what do you think of that? And the next day she's continually talking to me about it. And she's like, how would you feel if I did that? So I think these are conversations that I might not have had with her if I wasn't a sexologist, but I'm so happy that I can discuss this with my mother and I can discuss my own relationships with her as well, because that gate has been opened.
And in an intellectual way, not a smutty way or, you know.
And someone who has my best interest at heart.
Yeah.
It's not someone that's competing with me or trying to put me down. Mm. It's someone who really generally cares about me. So when it comes to getting advice, I wish all girls could go to their mothers for sex and relationship advice, because these are the people that A, have been there, and B, really care about you, but everyone thinks it's too awkward, because how would I talk to my mother about sex?
Something like that, So tell me, how did you, because, I mean, this is your full-time career now, you are a sex expert, you speak on television about this regularly. How did you get into this? How does it start?
Like, well, I mean, there's no sexology description when you go to school.
When you go to school, my career guidance teacher told me to be a sexologist.
I was really sexy as a teenager. Yeah. They said, why don't you be a sexologist? But I started off in the industry of wanting to help people. So I started studying psychology. And I thought I'd be a psychologist and I'd have a private practice. And I got through the whole degree and I went, I've learned a lot of statistics and a lot of research methods, but I still didn't feel that I had the skills to be dealing with people. So I went off and did another degree in counselling. And within that, I started working as a relationship counsellor. So I quite enjoyed those dynamics. And I also enjoyed dealing with sensitive topics. So, you know, I was sitting in rooms with families that were dealing with all sorts of demons and battles, and it was really intense, but that's where my forte was. But then I got into family mediation, so I found that very empowering, and I was in there at a really good time because the government had just put a lot of money into opening up new centres, but it was divorcing people for a living. And after
So was it people already going through divorces or helping them to get through the divorce?
It was going through divorces. So as an alternative to going to the family courts, the government turned around and said, everyone has to try and work this out between themselves, not to reconcile.
Yeah, but to make it...
Make your own parenting plan and work out how you're going to split your assets. And here is a neutral third party that will help you do it. And then they are the ones that decide whether you could go to court or not. So I was sometimes a certificate factory.
That's a power. That's a position of power.
It is, but it comes with a lot of negativity because you have a lot of people who don't want to be there and just want to pull the wool over your eyes and have a signature on a piece of paper to say they can go to court. And you see everything from child abuse and domestic violence, and it really does start to get you down as a human being because you lose faith. But you also see these people in distress, and you sit there and think, you know, what are we doing that we have a divorce rate of 50% these days? So that's
what are we doing? What is that?
I think we're trying to fit into a mold that wasn't meant for us. So we have this should be curse. And I would see this time and time again. Clients would come in and, you know, the story was, well, they started dating and he was the partner or she was the partner. Yeah. I should be dating. Oh, then we got married because that's what you should do when you're a certain age.
Probably the family would agree with this particular person and approve.
And we've been brought up with that fairy tale. You find Prince Charming, you get married, you have babies and everything's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
And people, not to say that it can't be, but people never stopped to think about what they wanted as an individual, away from everything else, away from religion, away from society. How did they want to live their life in their relationship?
Yeah.
So eventually the cracks start to form because we have this lack of education, a lack of communication, lack of empowerment for a lot of people to go out there and live the lives that they want to live.
Yeah.
And then they end up in my office with kids and debt and a lot of turmoil. So you start to get motivated to come up with a solution.
And it's interesting that you actually, I just picked up on what you said there about they never figure out what they really want. And then they end up years down the track with the shoulds and all this sort of stuff. And I see the same in the money world where people go, two things either happen. Either people end up very wealthy with no fulfillment, or they end up spending their whole lives chasing money and never really getting anywhere and never having the lives that they actually want. And they don't think about it. They always think, people say, well, I earn this much money, therefore this is the life that I can have. And I've sort of said to people, well, how about we flip that on its head and go, here's the life I want to have. Here's my dream, my vision, my creation. How much money am I going to have to go out and get to create that? And it's a much more empowering position to come from. So I'm assuming it's the same, I'm sure, with what you're doing.
It is very similar because everyone wants to have a better sex life.
Yeah.
But what...
Everybody does. I know. Everyone's afraid to say it.
And but what does that look like? Does that,
does that mean
five orgasms a night? Does that mean five times a week? Or does that mean laughing and having fun with your partner and connecting with them and experiencing intimacy? And the problem is we all, just like we all want a different figure for how we want to live our life.
Or what does success mean to each of us?
Yes, it's different the same thing with sexual success.
Yeah, right, okay.
Because for a lot of people, they place a higher importance on things like companionship and family and intimacy than having mind-blowing sex five times a week. But there are other people that are really highly sexual and need to be having mind-blowing, you know, orgies and things like that. And one is right for someone, it's not right for someone else. But yet as a society, we're trying to conform and people want to know the stats and the research because they want a level of normality to compare their own lives to. But the ironic thing is there is no such thing as normal when it comes to sex.
And is that what drives you a little bit to try and get people to realize that? Because actually, we are all, you know, we're reading the front page of Cosmo and it's going, here's how to have mind-blowing sex or four orgasms at a time. And you sort of think, is that what everyone's doing? Like, is that what I should be doing? You know, or...
But that, this is where you try to to get people to think differently about the subject of sex. And it is very difficult because you have to work with traditional models of media. But when you're in there, you can encourage these journalists and producers to say, hey, why don't we do a segment that's based on this? Or why don't we do a story that's based on this? And it takes a long time because you really need to build their trust and build those relationships and give in to all those stories that are, you know, 10 tips to an amazing blowjob. How many times are you having sex? And then you can say to them, once you've gained their trust, I've come across this really great story idea. Would you run it? I'll give you help with it.
Yeah.
So, but you can't just come in with guns blazing and say, I'm going to change the world of sex and everyone has to be thinking this way because
no one's going to
shut down.
No one's going to listen.
It's very confrontational. Yeah. So this is where I feel doing what I do as opposed to other sexologists that I've studied and worked with, they can be very confrontational in a bad way and people will retract from that. So it's really about trying to work out who your audience is, what they need to know, but how you are going to challenge them and how you're going to deliver that information where they will connect and think about what you're saying rather than either loving it or being scared of it.
It's that whole concept, and I think I'd said this to you before, it's that whole concept of sell them what they want and then give them what they need.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to buy what they actually need in terms of selling books and, you know, like TV shows and stuff like that. You have to kind of plant the seeds in. It's like giving kids food that they don't want to eat, you know, it's trying to plant the vegetables inside some chocolate or something.
Yeah, and I'm trying to put sex into chocolate.
Yeah, I like that idea.
You've got to always be mindful of your audience because I'm a 28-year-old female who's single, I'm not married, I don't have kids.
Yeah.
Now, I need to be mindful of some of the things that I'm going to say are going to be influenced from my personal life and that is going to be relative to an audience like me. However, I also need to think outside of the box and say, okay, well, when I'm addressing the mummy market, I need to go and do my research. I need to go to my girlfriends that are married with kids and get their personal perspective on it as well, because it might actually change my professional outlook, because I can't get up there and say this is the way it should be from personal experience.
Because you haven't lived it yet.
I haven't, but I can still educate them on some manner, but you need to understand every piece of the puzzle. And that's what happens with human sexuality. It's such a big industry.
It's a huge area.
You need to understand health. You need to understand money, family dynamics, all of these bits and pieces to be able to give the message that you've got to give.
And what about then? So after the counselling, you did the mediation, and then you went and did your PhD.
I did actually what they call a DHS, which is a doctorate in human sexuality. So they call it a professional doctorate.
Yeah.
I found this school in San Francisco called the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality.
You were like, that's it. That's what I'm going to do.
I'd never heard of it. I was interviewing a woman in Paris who had gone there, and everything she said just kind of clicked for me. And I was like, wow, this sounds right for me. Started off with a certificate program via correspondence, so I got all my work in the mail thinking, what am I doing? What is this degree?
Went over to San Francisco
and just fell in love with it and transferred into the doctorate. And I found that I kept following what I loved. I was totally clueless. I had no idea what I was actually doing. I just knew that I wanted to get out of mediation and I wanted to do something that was helping people and more, you know, for a cure for what I was saying.
Do you want to kind of, was it with the mediation, were you thinking, oh my God, look at all these people, I've gotten them at the point where it's fallen apart.
Yeah.
So did you want to kind of take a step back and say, how about I get to them before it gets to this? Right, okay. Yeah.
And I think also from a personal satisfaction job, it was very difficult because you don't, there's not really much you can go from, you know, go further.
You're either
a mediator or you're a supervisor. There wasn't a lot of
that doesn't
room
sound
to...
as sexy at all as sex expert or sexologist or, you know.
But there's not a lot of challenges in front of you. Your work is challenging on a daily basis. But I've always been the type of person that wants something to be able to I want to accomplish something and I want to keep going in life. And I found it was very negative for me personally, because you're taking on everyone else's negative energy.
That's
hard, So it was really important to me to find something that I loved.
Yeah.
And I took a big risk because I literally quit the job without anything and kind
of...
But
you followed your heart though, and what you liked, that intuition. Was it a strong sort of intuitive decision, do you think?
Yes. Yeah. I was determined to get out of that job, and I had my mother on the phone saying, well, why don't you stay there and look for something else?
God love our parents.
But the problem was, you're in a negative headspace. How can you look for something you love when you're miserable in your current everyday life? And
there's a lot of people that are going to be watching who are going to be in that situation right now. And you know what? It's that whole thing of saying at some point you have to jump.
Yeah.
You have to make the decision, but then you have to commit.
Yes.
Because once you decide and you leave, then you are in that situation where now it has to work.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a good thing because it has to work.
It is a good thing. And I think, you know, it's very scary because you leave the world of structure.
Yes.
You know, I haven't been working for somebody on a permanent paycheck for a long time. I have to get out there and, you know,
do your own
contract
business.
To contract. So it's a very scary idea to be there on your own and at a young age.
Yeah.
But the satisfaction that I get now from my work and the direction my work is going in, would never
all
think
worth
of
it.
If all the tears and there were moments where I would sit there and go,
What am I doing?
But
I know we've all done
that. It's always outweighed, and I have had people stare at me in the face and say, what is your plan B? And I'm thinking, plan B?
I don't think, like I said earlier, I think it just, you go into it and it has to work.
Yeah.
You're going to find the route, you're going to keep pivoting and changing and moving until it works, you know.
And I think you have to take on certain criticism, but you need to block out others, because a million and one people will tell you along the way no. They'll tell you it's not possible, you can't do it, or it can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you really need to be that type of person where you stop and go, why? Why are they telling me that? Is this something that really can't be done?
Or is it just their limiting beliefs?
And do I need to work around them? Because I'm not going to be focusing on the person that keeps saying no and stopping me. I'm not going to be focusing on them. Maybe look at the person next to them, or the person around them, or the person above them. Maybe they have a different vision on the whole aspect. So but it took me a long time to be comfortable with the no's and the knockbacks, because when they first came in, it's difficult. Yeah. This idea of rejection
and
failure.
I was talking to a sales expert the other day, and I actually used this with a client of mine just today, and she said to me, you know, in sales, she goes, she was American, she goes, we were taught to celebrate the no's because every time you get a no, you're one step closer to yes. And I thought, I love that. Yeah. That is just so powerful because
for every door that
we
closes,
find no really
opens.
Difficult yeah. to take. But actually, you know, when you're trying to forge ahead or with a business or doing contracts or whatever, you're going to get no's. Mm. It's just part of the game, you know, mm. and you have to be able to take the no's. But early on it's very hard.
I think I look at yeah. it now that if I have a contract or some work that yeah. I really want to do but falls through, mm. it actually opens up my time for something that comes along that I might not have been able to do if I would have taken that contract.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because I can only work with so many people, and mm. a lot of my contracts too, I have to be exclusive to a brand or a company for a certain period of time.
Yeah.
So instead of beating myself up and going, oh, that would have been great, yeah. I try to be optimistic and say, okay, well, I now have that time free and open to potentially
work
with someone else.
To see what other opportunities come my way. Yeah, yeah. So I want to get onto the topic now. We were talking about this off air of, you know, this money, sex, power thing, you know, mm. and they're all, the three of those things are such masculine concepts. Mm. And what is it about women that we actually do struggle with all of those concepts, women in particular? And I'm interested to know, I've been looking at the money thing, obviously, but what you're seeing in the sex world, when it comes to women, are they uncomfortable when you talk about it, or how does it all sort of play out?
Some people are and some people aren't, but yeah. I see the parallels with sex and money, that
yeah.
we have not educated women enough mm. in a way to control them with sex and money, because it's been one of those things in the past that, you know, women were meant to get married, yeah. be monogamous, virgins till married, and have babies because it ensured procreation, it ensured that the father would know who the babies were, all of that.
Yeah.
We're not living in that world anymore, but we still have that idea in a lot of situations. So this idea of maybe saying to women, have you thought about sexual pleasure? Have you thought about what mm. you want in the bedroom? Some people find that quite intimidating because we're giving women the control. And yeah. I feel that there's a parallel with money, that especially, you know, as a woman that's grown up, no one ever took me aside and said, this is how you manage your bank account.
Or are you even interested in how yeah. money can
do you want to
fuel
know?
Your... Because the view is, I mean, not so much anymore, but still our parents would have this, where mm. that generation would be thinking, of course you want your daughter to marry well.
Yeah.
Every father wants their daughter to marry well, because the feeling they have is they want you to be looked after, that you don't have to worry about money, and that you'll never have to think about it, and you'll have children and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I definitely see that with money as well. Women were not...
It's a way to keep.
To think about it.
It's a way to keep women in a certain position, and mm. I hate to say that at the same time, but I think we've got to be honest mm. that when women are not financially independent,
they're disempowered.
They are.
They're not powerful then.
And no. you know, it's a very difficult situation, because there is a yin and yang with men and women, and feminine and masculine.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that you hold on to feminine energy so you're able to have a masculine energy in your life. But then
yeah.
I have a very masculine energy as well.
Yeah.
So I need to be very cautious
with
that.
Well, I do too. Yeah, yeah.
Because you need to make sure that you're not being threatening to a man. But at the same
yeah.
time, you need to make sure that you're looked after by yourself. That yeah. if worse comes to worse, and my father always brought me up this way, he said, whatever happens in life, if you mm. end up on your own, he's like, I can't guarantee that a marriage will work, that a partner won't pass away, that you will always have everything
yeah,
around you.
Security.
If you end up on your own, I want to know that you're okay, and I want to give you the tools to make sure that you can fend for yourself. And I think that's what we
yeah.
need to be teaching women, is those basic tools, even things like, how do you change a tire in your car? What happens if you end up
so
stranded?
Simple, I know.
I would call RACQ, or now having its NRMA here,
yeah.
first thing. But if I was in a situation where my phone was dead, I couldn't call, I would
want
to know
do?
That I could
yeah.
do it. And it's the same thing financially, is I may not need to be in a situation where I'm paying the bills for a household. I don't
yeah.
know.
Mm.
But if that situation comes across where I am, or I have to be the breadwinner,
yeah.
or my partner gets sick, or my partner's no longer there,
yeah.
I want to know that my safety network underneath is me. That I've
yeah,
got the skills,
and that you feel
to do
empowered,
it.
And
yeah.
you go, okay. Because the other one is, and we always think about the what if we had no money.
Mm-hmm.
But the other hilarious one was not funny, but like, if you end up on your own because of a death, or even later in life, and there is a lot of money, that can also be a huge problem. Because
yeah.
as women, we don't focus on, you know, how to manage money in terms of investments and things like that. And what often happens, the stats are really high on this, the amount of women who end up financially worse off 5 years after a death because they ended up meeting a bad advisor, they didn't really know what they were doing, and they give their power away because they want to trust somebody. And then they usually trust somebody who's a shark because there's lots of sharks out there. So it's that whole thing of, you know, you need to understand money so that you can fend for yourself if the, you know, if the occasion arises, you know.
And you I think if you spend the time earning that money too, like I want to think that the money that I, that the time that I'm spending, all this I've gone through, yes, I love what I do, but I also want something to show for it. And I think really importantly for me at the moment, I want to be building my business from my money that I have earned. I don't want to have to be going to other people and having other people come on board. Maybe one day I will have to, but I love at the moment that I can say, well, my hard-earned money built my website and my hard-earned money paid for my own business cards. But I need to be smart about that because I've learned the you know, the hard way that you can get caught with certain people, even with things like websites.
I know. There's lots of sharks out
there. You've wasted a lot of money. But I think the important thing is you need to be able to make those mistakes sometimes, but learn from them.
And to know that you can make the money again. Because I suppose this whole thing is, I mean, you've spent a long time educating yourself, studying, doing research, and getting to the level that you're at. And you've you're building inherent value in yourself. And now you're giving that out to the world. And the way you get return value for that is in the form of money. So a lot of people, I was actually thinking about this the other day, so many women are out there not valuing themselves enough, so they're getting underpaid, they're not making enough money, they're discounting, all this sort of thing, and in the end it leads to depletion, resentment, overwhelm, and all these things. Even though you're doing what you love, you can end up becoming depleted because the value exchange is not being honored properly, you know. And lots of women will resonate with that.
That's really difficult when you start off in anything new, because I think, especially with what I did, I had to do a certain amount of free work. And it was a struggle because I needed to find, you know, you struggle because you want to be valued for what you're doing, and you want someone to say, you know what, you are worth what you are doing. It's that toss up, because you don't want to be sitting there and putting a dollar sign on your head and saying, well, you know, these are my limitations. But at the same time, it's very difficult sometimes, and we've spoken to this about before, saying, this is what I'm worth, and this is what I'm going
to
charge.
Rather than waiting for someone to tell you what you're worth, sometimes we have to, you know, realize our own worth and then what we're going to charge for that. I mean, over time, in the beginning, you do have to build up experience and all that sort of thing. So.
But it's the same thing in relationships.
Yeah.
Sometimes we need to stand up and go, you know what? I'm actually worth more than this. Yeah. You find yourself in a relationship with a guy.
And you decide that yourself.
You have to. But that's a very difficult step to make, because for a lot of women, they get comfortable, or, you know, someone's interested in them, and they settle. You know, they settle with someone that might be in a toxic relationship.
Absolutely.
So to get their confidence to say, you know what, I'm actually worth more than this, and I'm going to leave you and find something else. And it's the same thing when you have to say to a potential employer, this is what I'm worth financially, and I believe so because I've done XX, and if you're not happy to pay this, then I'm sorry, I can't work with you.
And actually, just on the relationship thing as well, I think for a woman to be able to walk away, particularly from a toxic relationship, and know that she's not financially bound to that person, because a lot of people won't leave because they think, well, if I leave, I don't know how to be by myself financially. You know?
And I've come across that a lot with women that are stuck in relationships because they can't fend for themselves and they can't stand on their own two feet. And my heart goes out to them because they're not happy. And
they're disempowered as well. They're not in a position of power. And that's that whole money, sex, power thing. It's just this whole intertwining of these things to disempower someone.
But I also sometimes question whether some people use this excuse when people want an excuse not to leave, because there are certain situations where, you know, you can go out there and you can get a job, but it may not be the lifestyle that they're accustomed to with a particular partner.
Yeah, if they're with somebody who's completely loaded and they're living the lifestyle of luxury, and they think, well,
and
if
they're
compromising
on their self for a life that actually isn't making them happy anyway.
I know. It's such a complex area. It really is. So tell me a little bit about the future for the Nikki Goldstein brand. Where, I mean, you know, how long have you been doing the sort of sexology, sex expert stuff now?
About 4 years.
And what's tell me about the future. What's your big vision? What do you see that you'd love to give to the world?
I kind of, you know, I'm going along the path of finding avenues to educate people. And at the moment, it is media, so it's TV, it's radio, it's books, it's magazines, but I'm also hoping to do something that is more accessible by the everyday person sitting at home on the computer.
Excellent.
Being able to bring the information to them, being able to bring bits of what I do to them, because, you know, the interesting thing is what I do and what I'm teaching it isn't always safe on mainstream media, and people don't always want to have it on mainstream TV shows, and you get very limited to what you can say and what you can do.
Because you get your 3-minute segment or your 5-minute bit.
And there might be kids that are watching, and there might be kids in the car. So we can talk about love, sex, and relationships, but often there's these subjects and these topics that people want to know about.
You can't get into the deeper stuff.
No, I could never get onto to TV and talk about anal sex.
No, you can't.
But funnily enough, I did an interview for a magazine last night, and it was exactly on that subject. And you know, we were talking about how this is an act that has gone from women doing it because they wanted to, you know, impress their boyfriend to now something that we're saying, you know what, we actually like this and we choose to do it for our own pleasure. But there needs to be, you know, people are looking for more answers and things like that. So,
And they don't want to, that's something they don't want to discuss. And actually, it's funny, I was just thinking of the parallel with money there.
Money and anal sex.
Nobody wants... Well, you think about, like, your purse, right? You just think, like, nobody wants to discuss their own... the sort of... the details of their own... the sordid details of their own spending patterns and their own, you know, issues around money and how much money they actually have versus what they think they should have. And it is... it's a really silent topic.
Yeah.
And people don't even want to be that vocal in forums or live webinars and things like that asking questions, but they will if you get them on their own.
And I think there's something to do with the issue of normal as well, because again, what is a normal spending for someone, earning for someone?
You know, should everyone's actually in a lot of the same boat, really. And, when I see people individually, I think we're all in the same boat, you know?
But should we be aiming for the same thing? Because we don't always want, you know, if we go back to the analogy that you were saying, what life do you want? We don't always want the same life. So do we need the same amount of money to live a different life?
And so, the truth about that is absolutely categorically no. Because like success for one person or dream life for one person could be, I always say, you know, an eco farm in New Zealand where they grow their own food and they're writing a book. For someone else, it's like, you know, they want an apartment in Manhattan, they want a Maserati outside the door, and they want that really, really big lifestyle. Those two people need entirely different levels of money. You know, and really for one person, how much money is enough money? That's the other thing. How much sex is enough sex?
This comes down to where do you get your validations from? Where do you get that energy, that high? Where do you get your happiness from? And I think it's interesting being a sexologist, but also working in media and playing in that world. And I've seen a lot of people who value fame as
that drives them,
as their validation. And for me, I'm very happy to be at home with my family in a onesie, chilling out. And that's what makes me happy. And my work is just a blessing on top of it. And I feel that I'm privileged to do what I'm doing. But I need to be very cautious that my happiness is not solely from that, because you go through ups and downs.
Yeah, because it can be taken away, or you just, you know, you can... It's like I was talking to somebody recently who was contemplating leaving a very long-term career that they've had for a long time. And it was a guy, actually, and I was sort of said to him, you know, you just want to think about what you really do want, because the minute you leave that, he has really taken his own value over the years from his role, and that is what has validated him, and it's his whole personality. I said, if you leave, all of a sudden fall off a cliff, then your self-worth could go downhill, because, you know, you haven't defined what it means for you.
And I really think for women especially, and I use this analogy, if you need to be able to be stripped bare in a plain room with no internet, with no phone, no social media, and be happy with exactly who you are, then you have the power to go and do all these other things. Because as soon as you get sucked into these negative spirals of, oh, if people are liking my Instagram photo, and if I'm on TV, and if I'm doing this,
and if I have the most perfect body, and I have the most perfect this, then I'll be happy. Be great.
And then that goal tends to move. And that's what I think the danger is, by putting all the focus on a goal and saying, I'll be happy when I get to there. And I did used to do it with my job. I'd be happy when I got this, this, and this. And then you start to get there and you go,
Well, that's the problem with goals. I'm have to set more. And then you keep striving all the time.
It's the same thing with this marriage idea. And I'm not trying to, you know, say that marriage isn't important. I am still a traditional, you know, female. But I think the problem is, for a lot of women, as they say, I will be content and happy when I get married and have kids.
Oh, I know.
And then they get there, and you know what? They still are content and happy, but there's still more to life. And there's still more room to explore different things. And I feel the same way with our careers. Sometimes we just, you know, absolutely stress out about it and say, you know what, I'll be happy when I get to this point.
When I make director, make partner, make this much money.
Exactly. And I've learned along the way to stop and smell the roses. And, enjoy every day of my job. And when I do reach those goals or something does happen, I think, wow, that's amazing. But I can also turn around and say, I had a great time getting there.
That's what you really want to do, actually, because it's everybody. And I always say to people, you know, the goal setting thing, people go, you know, well, should I set a goal that I want to buy a house? And I go, no, that is a goal. But you want to set like a vision plan of how I want to feel.
Mm.
Like, how do you want to wake up and feel every day?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't need the big house or all these things or that amount of money or whatever to feel that way. Mm. And getting really clear on that then takes the pressure and the stress away, because you think, unless you want to feel totally loaded and wealthy and you're broke. But then you got to do something about that. And yeah. I think then you got to get on a path to doing that. Yeah.
And that's the thing. I try and focus very hard with my work to be happy every day and enjoy it.
Mm.
And then when you do come across something that doesn't make you feel good, you really have to stop and think why. And you have to think about the motivation behind certain work, because you have to go, is this a personal motivation? Do I want to do this work because I want to be seen there, I want to be published there,
yeah.
or is this a great opportunity to reach my audience? And I'm always pulling myself back to look at that difference and think, is this a personal motivation for doing this, or is this a professional? And there are sometimes situations where it is a personal motivation, and I'm working with the Cancer Council again this year, and I did it last year, and that's purely about personal motivation, not about professional, but at least I have to acknowledge it and know when I'm doing something that, you know, might not fit into the other things I've done, but it's something I feel really passionate about.
And that lights you up, yeah.
Yeah.
I have one more question before we go. So you've been really successful in the PR area. Like, you've gotten in great magazines, you're on Channel 7 all the time. How do you get, so there's lots of people out there going to be wondering, how do you do that? But how do you get into very the media, PR, how do you get that all moving for you? And is it worth it? That's the other thing.
It depends. I mean, I was very fortunate that I had no media experience, and I was taken into Channel 7, and within 2 weeks I was on air scratching my head going, what do I do? Which camera do I look at? Like, I didn't know anything, but I soon saw the value in being there, because for what I do, it's really important to have a platform, to have the credibility, and to be able to reach a mainstream audience.
Mm.
But I think, you know, the first question is, why do you want to do it? Is it a personal motivation of, great, I'm on TV, or will this actually help your business?
Is it ego-driven, or is it actually,
And I would encourage people to look at non-traditional forms of media. So by that, don't be focusing on, I've got to get on morning shows and the news and things like that, because really that's only reaching a smaller population. And with those morning TV shows, I'm very lucky because a lot of the things I talk about relate to new mums and parents and things
who
like
are
that.
Watching.
And they're watching. But you have to think about, is that the audience that's right for your business? So sometimes you're better off by reaching out to people that have blogs, reaching out to websites, doing articles for things that are online, because I've seen the difference between online campaigns that can absolutely spread like wildfire. And we did one with Durex last year that was a perfect example of that, but it was very difficult to put it onto mainstream media.
Yeah,
no TV wanted to touch it, no magazines,
too taboo.
No radio.
Yeah.
But online, it went like wildfire, and it reached to the US, and we were doing interviews for online magazines and online blogs.
Yeah.
And it ended up to be a very successful campaign. So I always think you have
to look get too hung up on this kind of sense of, you know, I need to be in Marie Claire magazine, or I need to be in some of these things.
Yeah.
You know? Because actually, I know we've talked about this, but I'm not sure sometimes the return from those. It's great for your credibility, but at some point you have to get stuff that's a bit more of a lead generator, I guess.
And I think you're always going to have a point of difference. I think if you are going to be approaching producers and journalists, keeping in mind that they are very busy these days and under a lot of pressure, because it is a struggling industry. So if you are approaching them, I think one of the biggest things is manners as well. Understand that they are busy. Understand that they get bombarded by so many different people. So you need to ask around and find out, if you're pitching a particular person, how do they like their pitches done? How do they function how do they work? Because some people don't want you calling up their phones and leaving messages. They want an email that says, subject heading, what's it about, study, idea, this is my hours when I'm free to do it. You try to make their job as easy as possible.
Yeah.
But then I think you also have to give them your point of difference, because if you happen to be a personal trainer or a vet or
some
fashionista,
there
are so many different people. So what makes you different to everyone else is there? Why should you belong on TV, or why should you be in the magazine? And you really need to look at that from an outsider point of view and display that to them. because that's what they're going to be looking for. If you,
because otherwise you're kind of wasting your time, aren't you? Really, I mean, you've got to get that right, and rather than put so much work into this and get nowhere with it.
And a lot of energy goes into it, and I think that's where you need to be asked those questions. You know, is this the right thing for me to be doing? Is this the right thing for my brand?
Is there better use of my time?
Exactly.
Because actually, yeah, it is that return.
And you have to follow up, and you have to deal with rejections, and you get, you know, you get hung up about it. So you really need to look at the motivation first, and then do your research about, well, how am I going to tackle this?
Yeah.
But I think for anybody who is in an expert or has something to say, you know, you need to be that person that people will call you up for a comment.
And yeah, that's what you want to get to.
And I think, you know, give them ideas, work with them, build relationships with them. And that's how you're able to PR yourself, because you can't just call someone up and say, I'm an amazing person, do a feature
on me. I'm so great,
you
should,
let me write
you
an
should
article.
Know me. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, everyone's busy, and if you can help them out, then if you've got something interesting to give, then eventually
the tables will chip away. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to connect with you, they want to further see more of your work, where should they go? Your website?
I would say website first, so drnikkig.com.au. But I'm also very big on social media, so Instagram and Twitter, which is just dr_NikkiG.
Okay, great.
So I'm always open to people's feedback, Facebook comments, and I think it's really important that people do chime in and contact and say, you know, I agree with something that you say, or I disagree.
Yeah, absolutely. Comment on the show. I think that's the thing. Anybody who's agreed with some of the things that Nikki's been saying today, definitely comment. Because this is such a huge topic.
Because there is no normal at the end of the day, and I might be an expert, but I'm also just one person or one opinion. So I find it really fascinating what other people have to say, because that's how I feel I grow. Because sometimes I need to be challenged and think
other
perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Nikki, thank you so much for being on the show. I really wanted to get this topic on, and I know I've been chasing you for a while to come on the show, so it's been a real pleasure having
you
here.
Worth the wait.
And thank you to everyone for watching again for another week. As always, you can catch me later this week on my Wealth Unplugged podcast, where I'll be giving you my key takeouts for my chat with Nikki, and you can get that on my website at energizewealth.com. And until next week, have a great week, and I'll see you then.